From Washington, this is VOA News. I'm Victor Beatty reporting. President Donald Trump Monday said he's not backing down from proposed tariffs on steel and aluminum imports and tweeted he would tie any tariff relief for Canada and Mexico with a renegotiated NAFTA free trade agreement.
But if I do make a deal which is fair to the workers and to the American people, that would be, I would imagine, one of the points that we'll negotiate. It will be tariffs on steel for Canada and for Mexico.
The proposed tariffs, 25% on steel and 10% on aluminum, would hit U.S. neighbors Canada and Mexico the hardest. Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau told Mr. Trump in a phone call the tariffs would be an impediment to the ongoing NAFTA talks. The top U.S. trade negotiator acknowledged slow progress after several rounds of NAFTA discussions, warning time is running out to renegotiate the 24-year-old trade deal. Meanwhile, prospect of a new U.S. tariffs have prompted politicians and business leaders to express alarm over an igniting trade war. European Union spokesman Margarita Schinas said trade policy is not about winners and losers. It should be a win-win situation.
But, as our president said, we cannot bury our heads in the sand. And when someone takes unilateral and unfair action that puts thousands of European jobs at risk, we have to act.
Mr. Trump expected to finalize those tariffs this week or next. Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari is planning to visit Yobe State, where more than 100 schoolgirls were abducted by suspected Boko Haram insurgents last month. The 75-year-old leader is also expected to tour several other hotspots, including Taraba, Benue, Zamfara, and River States, scenes of political and ethnic violence. Mr. Buhari elected in 2015 on the promise of ending the bloody Boko Haram insurgency. This is VOA News. President Trump meeting at the White House Monday with Israel's visiting Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said he may attend the ceremonial opening of the U.S. Embassy in Jerusalem.
We're looking at coming. If I can, I will, but I'll be there again. Israel is very special to me, special country, special people, and I look forward to being there, and I'm very proud of that decision.
The opening of the embassy is scheduled for May. He announced that decision in December. The president also said his administration is finalizing a new peace initiative to resolve the Israel-Palestinian conflict.
It would be a great achievement, and even from a humanitarian standpoint, what better if we could make peace between Israel and the Palestinians? And I can tell you, we are working very hard on doing that.
Mr. Netanyahu expressed alarm over the Iranian threat. Both leaders expressed deep reservations about the effectiveness of the 2015 international nuclear agreement with Tehran and its presence in Syria. North Korea leader Kim Jong-un met late Monday with a South Korean delegation and is said to have expressed his firm will to advance inter-Korean ties and pursue reunification. The South Korean presidential spokesman said the two sides met for more than 4 hours discussing a proposed summit between Mr. Kim and South Korean President Moon Jae-in. In Syria, humanitarian aid trucks reached Syria's beleaguered rebel-held eastern Ghouta region Monday, although government forces are said to have blocked the delivery of vital supplies. Ali Zatari is a UN spokesman.
We will deliver to local councils and civilian groups. We don't deliver to military groups. We deliver also in coordination, very close coordination with the Syrian Arab Red Crescent. And we hope that the civilians will get a fair share, their ultimate share of the humanitarian supplies.
The convoy pulled out after unloading for 9 hours. Not all supplies were offloaded. And the government's bombardment continued. Reports indicate government forces are now in control of about a third of eastern Ghouta. Slovak Prime Minister Robert Fico said he's ready to discuss political issues with his coalition partners following the murder of an investigative journalist and his fiancée that prompted President Andrzej Kiska to call for substantive changes in government or early elections to regain the trust of the people. Mr. Fico said there is an attempt to totally destabilize the state. The journalist, Jan Kuciak, was investigating alleged tax fraud cases and corrupt links between businessmen and politicians. In Zimbabwe, a retired general and ally of ousted President Robert Mugabe has formed a political party to challenge incumbent Emmerson Mnangagwa in polls scheduled for July. The 94-year-old Mr. Mugabe was forced to step down by the military in November. Ambrose Mutahiri quit the ruling ZANU-PF party and gave up his parliamentary seat on Friday. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Mbatha in Washington. Today is Tuesday, March 6th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Nigeria's president embarks on visits to areas hard hit by recent Boko Haram attacks.
He's there because he has got reports from the various centers of internecine conflict in different parts of the country. And having read the report, he feels it's time to then visit the people, condole with them.
Femi Adesina is the special advisor of media and publicity to President Muhammadu Buhari. President George Weah asked for 6,000 Nigerian teachers to come to Liberia, but is there really a teacher shortage in Liberia? We'll speak with an official of Sierra Leone's Elections Commission as that country awaits Wednesday's vote. And U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson visits Africa this week.
Secretary Tillerson will meet up with leadership in each country, as well as the leadership of the African Union Commission based in Ethiopia, to further our partnerships with the governments and the people of Africa.
The State Department spokesperson Heather Nauert, thousands are displaced by recent South Sudan fighting, and we'll talk about efforts to replenish the vanishing waters of Lake Chad. Those stories, plus our listener of the day, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari has embarked on visits to areas hit hard by recent Boko Haram attacks. On Monday, he visited Yobe State, where 110 girls were allegedly abducted in February by Boko Haram. It's not clear if the president will visit the school in Dapchi, from where the girls were taken. Femi Adesina is a special advisor on media and publicity to President Buhari. He says the purpose of the president's visit is to assess the level of Boko Haram incursions as well as console the communities. Adesina denies President Buhari is under pressure to show results in his government's efforts to eradicate Boko Haram, since he had declared before that the terrorist group had been defeated.
Well, he's there because he has got reports from the various centers of internecine conflict in different parts of the country. And having read the report, he feels it's time to then visit the people, condole with them, despite the fact that he had sent condolences earlier, and then discuss with them on finding practical ways of moving forward and finding enduring solutions to the conflict. So that's why he has been to Taraba, and he will still go to four other states.
Does he intend to visit Dapchi?
No. He's visiting states. Of course, Dapchi is part of a state, so he will visit Yobe. Where he goes in Yobe will be determined by the time the visit comes.
Uh-huh. May I ask you, with the elections next year, the president, when he was running for president, he made this promise that he was going to get rid of Boko Haram. Does he feel now that the time is pressed against him, the fact that Boko Haram is still wreaking havoc on the country?
Boko Haram, as we have it today, is not that we had it in 2015. What you have today is just the rump of Boko Haram. It's a far, far cry from the way it was in 2015. When we say Boko Haram has been degraded, you better believe it. It has been terribly degraded.
How can that organization be degraded and continue to do what it is doing?
If you knew the organization had the strength, then you don't need convincing that it has been degraded. We live in this country, and we were here when Boko Haram was at the height of its strength. If you compare then and now, you agree that, yes, it has been severely degraded.
Maybe I should ask you, I think I did speak with someone from the opposition PDP. There was an article that the ruling party had maybe endorsed the president for re-election. Since I'm speaking to you, maybe let me ask you, does the president intend to seek re-election?
The president will announce if he is going to seek re-election. And because he has not announced it, then we wait until he speaks. But, of course, if he's going to seek re-election, he wants votes from the people, so he has to tell the people. Now that he has not told them, we can only wait until he speaks.
Liberian President George Weah is in your country and met with President Buhari on Monday. What can you tell us about the meeting?
Well, it was a brotherly meeting, a thank-you visit, as President Weah said. He came to say thank you to Nigeria for support to Liberia in its dark hours during the civil war in that country, and how Nigeria helped Liberia to rebuild. And now that he is president, he still seeks more support and collaboration with Nigeria. So basically, it was a thank you message.
So did President Weah ask President Buhari for any assistance with Liberia's economy? I see an article that says that Weah would like 6,000 Nigerian teachers to come to Liberia.
He unfolded a number of requests, which included economic collaboration. He said trade between the two countries was rather negligible, and he wanted to see more of it.
Femi Adesina is the special advisor on media and publicity to Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari. He was speaking with me from the capital, Abuja. Liberian President George Weah has asked for 6,000 Nigerian teachers to come to Liberia as part of a technical assistance program between the two countries. Weah, who was visiting Nigeria Monday, says the Nigerian teachers will compensate for what he called the shortage of good teachers in Liberia's educational system. But is there really a teacher shortage in Liberia? Amara Fofana is the Deputy National Secretary for Media and Advocacy of the Coalition for the Transformation of Liberia. He says the Weah administration should focus on building the capacity of current teachers through training and also by paying them salaries that will motivate them further.
Well, thank you very much. I think in as much as Liberia is currently in need of help, I don't believe that teachers are part of our need, more especially foreign teachers or teachers from different countries are part of our priority currently, because we have teachers in our country, and in fact, some teachers were laid out by the past government, and currently what needs to be done is to build the capacity of our teachers and empower them, give them a kind of salary that will commensurate with their effort, and that will motivate more teachers. By our law in Liberia, it is said that the Liberian budget, 25% of our country budget, each budgetary year should go towards education. But currently, we don't even have 10% going towards the educational system. And these are priority areas. So what the George Weah administration needs to do right now is to begin to revamp the educational sector through most of the teacher training colleges. You got the KROTTR, that's the Kakata Teacher Training College, and the ZROTTR, and the rest of the teacher training colleges. You need to revamp them and encourage people that have the requisite knowledge to go there to train our teachers. The A certificate, the B certificate teachers should be paid according to their qualification.
The president said these teachers are needed to make up for what he called the shortage of good teachers in Liberia's educational system. Is there a shortage of good teachers in the educational system of Liberia?
Not at all. Not at all. There is no shortage of good teachers. What is existing on our ground? The lack of motivation and commensurable salary for our teachers. We have very dedicated and passionate teachers in our country. But our government and even some private schools who take huge amount of money from students don't really give that kind of money to teachers to motivate them. And you know, in every sector, the lack of motivation can definitely lead to decline in performance.
If I understand what the president is talking about, maybe this assistance, the request he's making about the teachers, is going to be part of this technical assisting cooperation agreement between Liberia and Nigeria. So I am assuming that perhaps Nigeria will pay these teachers. You were also talking about where would the teachers stay?
Well, you know, definitely Nigeria will not provide a housing if Nigeria desires to pay, because it's a request to help you with teachers. Now, if Nigeria desires that she would pay her teachers according to the ratio or the rate they pay their teacher in Nigeria, I don't think that Nigeria will shoulder the responsibility for their stay, their housing, their feeding, their mobility, and other allowances are going to be on the head of the Liberian government. And you heard the president during the inaugural speech say the economy is broken and the country is broke. And up to now, our own civil servants, including teachers of our country, have not taken pay. Where are we going to get the money from to compensate or to look for housing or mobility or fee those 6,000 teachers?
Amara Fofana is the Deputy National Secretary for Media and Advocacy of the Coalition for the Transformation of Liberia. He was speaking with me from the capital, Monrovia. You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Tuesday, March 6. Daybreak Africa time is now 15 minutes past the hour. Campaigning has ended for Sierra Leone's presidential election, which takes place tomorrow, Wednesday. The National Electoral Commission has declared today, Tuesday, as a day for reflection to give prospective voters the chance to mull over the candidates of their choice. The commission also says it has implemented improved measures and it is ready to administer free, fair, and transparent elections on Wednesday. VOA's Peter Clarté, who is covering the election, spoke with Electoral Commission spokesman Albert Masekwai first on the commission's activities for Tuesday.
The commission will be doing a lot of logistical arrangements and movements, deployment of materials from point A to point B. At this moment, we are talking about deploying our materials from district storage facilities to constituency storage facilities and eventually to constituencies, from district storage facilities to the constituencies and further into center storage facilities. So basically, we are doing a lot of deployment, ensuring that whilst Sierra Leoneans are reflecting in order to cast their vote, we are going the extra mile within the law to ensure that we create the level playing field. Come Wednesday, tomorrow, all polling stations are opened and they are able to cast their votes.
So, Albert, is the Electoral Commission satisfied with measures it implemented so far to ensure the vote is free and peaceful?
Yes. Taking it from the point of view that even the political parties are okay with what we are doing so far, they've given us a lot of thumbs up, which is very much good. And also from the responses we are getting from other stakeholders, we can say, yes, we are doing good. In Africa, there's this proverb that you don't praise yourself. So what we do is we allow our stakeholders to comment, and from the commendation, it is positive. From the logistical perspective and from even what we are doing, we have not had anything that will warrant the elections not to go on. So we are on track, and we hope in less than 24 hours, Sierra Leoneans will be able to cast their ballot all over the country.
Political party leaders and presidential candidates that we have spoken with have said that the Electoral Commission has done well by engaging them and that most of their concerns have been addressed. Have you finished addressing all their concerns before the election?
Well, we have emerging concerns as they come up. Whenever these concerns come up, we think the available means that we have within the laws of Sierra Leone would ensure to continue to address some of these concerns. But so far, so good. We've done quite a bit, especially the critical ones. I'm not sure there are any concerns now that we will not be able to address, unless probably these are unreasonable ones. But would tell the political parties that some of these concerns that they are raising are not within the legal framework of the conduct of elections. But we've done our level best with our engagement with them and explaining to them that within the legal framework, we have been able to address a good number of their concerns and they are satisfied. I'm pretty sure about that.
Talking about prospective Sierra Leone voters, how has the education and the sensitization program gone so far? And are you satisfied with it?
Well, yes, we are satisfied. It is always never exhaustive because it is an ongoing process. Even as I speak to you, we are doing a lot of electoral education. Even within 24 hours, we'll continue to do massive engagements with the public. On election day, our laws make provision for electoral education to happen within the polling station. So we'll use that as a last-minute engagement with voters.
Albert Masekwai, spokesman for the Sierra Leone Electoral Commission. He was speaking with VOA's Peter Clarté, who is on assignment in Freetown covering that country's election. U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson is set to travel to Africa this week, beginning today, Tuesday, with counterterrorism and advancing mutual ties high on the agenda. He will meet with leaders from Chad, Djibouti, Ethiopia, Kenya, and Nigeria. VOA's State Department correspondent Nikki Chang reports.
Secretary of State Rex Tillerson's travel to Africa comes after the recent mass kidnapping of schoolgirls in Nigeria. State Department officials say finding ways to combat such incidents, and promoting counterterrorism and security cooperation are high priorities for the top U.S. diplomat.
Secretary Tillerson will meet up with leadership in each country, as well as the leadership of the African Union Commission based in Ethiopia, to further our partnerships with the governments and the people of Africa. In particular, he plans to discuss ways that we can work with our partners to counter terrorism, advance peace and security, promote good governance, and spur mutually beneficial trade and investment.
The United States recently put several affiliates of the Islamic State terror group in Africa on the terrorism blacklist.
Africa has traditionally been an area in which terrorist groups have operated. And part of the reason for that is because they assess that they are able to move across borders undetected. What we've tried to do is stand up the capabilities, not just of military authorities in the region, but also border security authorities and law enforcement authorities in the region.
According to the State Department, 5 of the world's 10 fattest growing economies are in Africa. By 2030, Africa is expected to represent about 1/4 of the world's workforce and consumers. But experts note more must be done to take advantage of this growth.
The continent needs to work more harmoniously in dealing with issues related to health care, to conflict, to strengthening trade, and breaking down tariff and economic barriers that prevent the continent from realizing its potential.
Tillerson's trip is also seen as a good opportunity for the United States to reaffirm ties with African nations, particularly after President Donald Trump referred to the continent and Haiti in a derogatory manner earlier this year. Nike Chin, VOA News, the State Department.
The United Nations Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs in South Sudan says continued clashes between government and opposition forces in January and February have forced thousands of people to flee their homes in the country's Upper Nile region. Wake Simon Wudu reports from Juba.
Ian Ridley, the head of UN OCHA in South Sudan, says 8 agencies are working to provide life-saving assistance to around 9,000 civilians who have been displaced from their homes following clashes between the government and opposition forces in multiple locations in the Upper Nile region. Ridley says 8 agencies are providing food, water, and shelter to families displaced by fighting.
So, for example, right now, aid agencies are working in Jonglei. I would highlight Akobo, where we receive in that general vicinity reports of conflict, and aid agencies are there to meet the needs of populations when they're displaced. So sometimes hundreds, thousands of people move as a result of conflict in an area.
UN OCHA says from 9th to 26th of January this year, fighting erupted in Uai, Uror, Nyirol, and Akobo, forcing some civilians to flee to neighboring Ethiopia as refugees. The UN says Jonglei State and Koch County in the former Unity State are among some of the affected areas. UN OCHA says a UN-run protection of civilians or POC site in Bor also registered 60 people and new arrivals fled from the villages of Walgak, Tanyang, and Podoch in Akobo County. Various South Sudanese armed groups continue to fight after signing the cessation of hostilities agreement in December last year. South Sudan's military spokesman, Brigadier General Lulu Roy Kwang, disputed the UN OCHA's report, claiming government forces were not involved in any violence.
The time that both parties were negotiating in Addis Ababa is starting from 22nd December to 25th. And I was the first who came out informing the whole world about the violations that were being carried out by different opposition fighters. And we were proven right that the violations in many parts of the country were carried out by the opposition fighters, especially in Koch.
The SPLA-IO deputy military spokesman, Colonel Lampol Gabriel, confirmed fighting took place in January in the areas mentioned in the UN OCHA's report. Gabriel says the visit by First Vice President Taban Dengai to Jonglei in January, with a huge number of soldiers, escalated fighting in the area.
The clash happened, but we did not orchestrate it. The SPLMIO did not start it. We have been on the defense throughout.
SPLMIO and the former detainees accused the First Vice President Taban Dengai in January for violating the cessation of hostilities agreement signed by various South Sudanese parties in December. Deng's spokesman denied the accusation, saying the First Vice President was on a peace mission. For VOA News, Amwaki Simon Wudu in Juba.
After last week's meeting in Abuja that addressed a vanishing Lake Chad, which has lost 90% of its waters since the 1960s, authorities and advocates are hopeful a solution may be found sooner than later. UN resident and humanitarian coordinator in Chad, Stephen Toll, spoke to Ricky Stryak about the urgency of addressing the Lake Chad basin crisis, where 40 million people rely on the lake for their survival.
It's interesting when in some of the areas, the north part of Lake Chad currently, we find the concentrations of the internally displaced, the people displaced from the islands, to be maybe 60 to 100 kilometers away from the lake shore. And one time I asked some of them, well, why did you come here to the middle of the desert to set up your place of temporary residence when displaced from the lake shore or the islands? And they said, this was, an older man said, well, this was where I was born. This was our home in the 50s, which was at the shore of the lake. So this is 70 kilometers away from the current lake shore. So you can see the it's completely changed the livelihoods for the people over these years. They've had to follow the receding waters. And now with the interruptions by Boko Haram and the conflict, it just makes livelihoods much, much more precarious for the population.
Does this situation embolden groups of insurgents such as Boko Haram? Are they able to recruit among the local population easier due to this situation?
Probably. I mean, certainly, you know, there are a lot of us in the UN and also other partners who are trying to look into the causes of radicalization and violent extremism, and at the lake area, what was the fertile ground out of which Boko Haram rose. And one of the factors clearly has been the pressure that normal citizens, normal people of the lake region began to feel for their livelihoods in these recent decades. It's a very remote and very poor part of Chad, as well as the neighboring countries. One of the poorest regions of each of the countries of the Lake Chad Basin is the lake itself. And so it's quite remote. Again, many people were living on the islands, which had no kind of public or state presence or services. And so I think that's pretty good breeding ground for recruitment at Boko Haram.
From the meeting this week in Abuja, where leaders gathered to try and find a solution, was there anything that came out of it that was extremely encouraging, or, you know, what was your takeaway?
I'm happy to see UNESCO taking an interest in the Lake Chad Basin as an ecosystem, because indeed I think a lot of the issues that need to be looked at here are scientific study of such an ecosystem and then sensible planning for use of the resources, but also preservation of this ecosystem for the future.
That was Stephen Toll, the UN resident and humanitarian coordinator in Chad. He was speaking to Ricky Stryak from N'Djamena. And that is it for this Tuesday, March 6th edition of Daybreak Africa. Join us again tomorrow for more Africa news and features right here on the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as post-editor Samson O'Malley, along with all of our engineers, I'm James Barton in Washington, wishing you in Africa a very good day.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, voters in Sierra Leone go to the polls on March 7th to elect a new president, parliament, and local councils. President Ernest Bai Koroma is stepping down after serving two terms. His presidency faced the Ebola outbreak and allegations of corruption. An in-depth discussion on the most pressing issues facing Sierra Leone on the next Straight Talk Africa at 18:30 UTC. See.